This week on Pop of Culture, we go rug hooking. Yes, rug hooking.
My sister fell in love with it the first time she saw it. And I was just, yeah, I just walked by, didn't, you know, pay much attention. She goes, we need to take these classes. I said, no, we don't.
We'll have original music from local musician Jerry Barker.
I always do words first and then pick up the guitar. So it's like a poem first.
And more coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. Coming up this hour, we learn about an art form that may have traveled with the Vikings.
But we'll start today a little farther inland. Joining me to talk about all things local music is Jerry Barker. Jerry, thanks for coming into the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's go back to when all of this began for you, Jerry. When did you get interested in music? When did you start playing? I always love a good kind of an origin story. When did it start?
Well, I read Johnny Cash's autobiography, and that made me want to pick up the guitar. And then starting to write songs is probably when I heard the times they are a-changing.
Yeah.
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 So those two, I couldn't have done anything without them.
So how old were you at the time when you read the autobiography?
Seventh grade, so what, like, was it 13, I think?
So you read the autobiography, you were like, this is what I want to do. So you went to your mom and you said, hey, can you get me a guitar? Or did you already have a guitar laying around, or what happened?
My sister had an old cheap one that wasn't very easy to learn on, but it worked.
Yeah. And so describe the process. There you are sitting in your room as a 13-year-old, and what are you doing? You're self-taught, right?
Yeah, self-taught. I would listen to Johnny Cash songs and just learn the boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, 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 boom.
You could put a lot of words to that.
That's right. And I have.
All right, so tell me what happened next. So you're learning the guitar, you're playing, you're learning covers of songs. When did it kind of click for you that you wanted to start writing songs?
I always wanted to. Mm. Was never good at it. Still don't think I'm that good at it, but I can do it now.
Well, I disagree with you, Jerry, wholeheartedly.
But, but I learned how to somehow. I was reading a lot of poetry at the time, mm-hmm. listening to a lot of music, remembering all the words to Visions of Johanna and stuff like that in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Learning to play the harmonica.
Yeah. And so how many hours were you putting in? Did this like consume all of your waking hours learning to play guitar and harmonica and
absolutely
kind of getting it down?
Yeah. After school, that's all I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you decide that you were ready to play out? And I say that knowing that there are a lot of people that never really do that. They just kind of play on their own. When did you decide you wanted to kind of share this with other people?
I was so dang nervous. it was actually at my parents' restaurant. I used to just play instrumental guitar there. I was too scared to sing, but I'd play instrumental songs.
And when was that? How old were you when you started to do that?
I want to say this was like right before the pandemic happened, like 2020.
Okay. So this was 2020 and you were how old?
19.
And this was at the Green Diamond Junction?
That's right.
So you were performing. How often were you performing in the dining room of the Green Diamond Junction?
Maybe once a week for a couple months.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what kinds of things were you playing? That were you just taking the words out of your songs, or were you doing instrumentals?
Just doing instrumentals. Mm-hmm. I wasn't just strumming chords. I just like to learn the melodies of the songs.
Oh, yeah.
Like Carter Family Style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then from there, you did what? What was your next step? Did you start doing open mics? Is that kind of where you kind of got comfortable singing?
Yeah.
The
first open mic I did was at Be Here Now.
Yeah.
And Man, I was so nervous. There's nobody there, but I'm still nervous.
I can't imagine, number one, getting up in front of people and singing. It's putting yourself out there, number one. Number two, it's next level when you do original music. Because then you're like, oh, here's something that I made. Let me throw it out here.
Absolutely. I mean, it's easier now, but I still remember how I felt at the time. It was horrible.
Yeah, yeah. So that was your first one. How did it go? If you were to look back on that first time, tell me, walk me through like how you were feeling and what that was like.
I think you just sort of black out. there's no other way to describe it.
Remember the chords and the words, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you practice enough. I mean, especially autopilot. Your first time. Yeah. That's all you do. You practice for like 2 months before you work up the courage to do your first time.
Yeah. And then how often? So obviously it went pretty well. Jerry, you went back, right? And so
I went back. I have been back.
Well, now you host it.
Yep.
And that is every Wednesday.
Wednesday, 9:30 to 12:30.
And anybody can come out?
Yeah.
And play? Yeah, mm-hmm. They just sign
up. Poetry or...
Whatever. It's an open mic for whatever.
Yeah. Comedy.
Awesome. Nice. Now, this is sometimes like doing solo, just you and the guitar, but other times it's with your band, right? Talk a little bit about your band.
My band is called Jerry Barker and the Onion Cutters. I picked that name because I wanted just something ridiculous and also 50s sounding.
Yes.
And also Tom Petty related, I guess, because I love Tom Petty.
But yeah.
I don't really like playing solo as much anymore. It's a lot of fun to play with them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you had a pretty big opening gig for somebody in 2023. Tell me about that.
So the owner of Be Here Now, Whitney Lewis, mm-hmm. was, I'm pretty sure, the main contributor of getting Don McLean to come into town.
Yeah.
In between his tour stops. And he reached out to me. I'd only been playing out live for less than a year at that point.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and he asked me if I could open up for Don McLean at the brand new Brown Family Amphitheater.
Wow.
So that was the first show there, so technically I was the first person to play on that stage.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah, do you remember? How long did you play?
I want to say probably 25 minutes or 30.
Nice.
I did all of my own songs, like 5 or 6 of them.
Wow.
Yeah. I wasn't nervous at all. I had a lot of fun in front of that many people. That was easier than playing for one person, honestly. I
mean, really?
Yeah.
And is it? And why would you say that? Is it because you're getting something from the audience? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little bit more energy between the audience, yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
People actually clap.
You know,
I don't
when
take
there?
For granted. Yeah. Yeah, I don't take that for granted.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I get it. And so did you get to meet Don McLean? Did he hear your set at all?
I don't know if he heard it, but I did get to meet him because mm-hmm. I was accidentally in the wrong dressing room.
Nice. So is that the biggest gig you've had thus far? Or
I'd say so. Yeah. 1 month later, after Don McLean, I opened up for Afro Man.
I'd be here now.
Yeah.
Well, that is an interesting combo.
I did not belong there.
Those two. Did you do covers that night or originals?
Nope, I did all my own songs again.
I love it. It was packed in there, wasn't it?
It was packed.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, I mean, it's just more eyes and ears, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
When should I start? I saw a light on the horizon last night, and I just can't knock it from my mind. Lord, I'm confused and I'm wondering why, if I'm bound for Hades or the by and by. Well, time is short, but my days are long, so I keep on humming a Neil Young song. Tell me, why are the good days gone? When the time burns out, it's time to move on. Nothing's making any sense. Like a candle in the wind, I got no time to spend. No, I don't want to be alone. I don't want to be alone. Take me down to County Line Road, where we used to go. I've been out of sorts since I woke up today. Things don't get better. They only change what it looks to me like. It's all the same while some folks leave and some folks stay. Nothing's making any sense. Like a candle in the wind, I got no time to spend. No, I don't want to be alone. No, I don't want to be alone. Take me down to County Line Road, where we used to go.
Do you record notes on your phone? Do you have a little notebook? What is the process?
I have a notebook and I have a lot of voice memos on my phone.
Yes, I bet you do. So what kinds of things as you go about your daily life, what inspires you? What is happening in your life that you're like, oh, that's a song?
I don't know. I guess I just think too much. And then I like, oh, that sounds good. I'll write a song about that.
Yeah.
I always do words first. And then pick up the guitar. So it's like a poem first.
Interesting. And then, yeah. Interesting. So what was, tell me about your last, the last song you wrote and what it was about and how long it took you from start to finish.
The last song I wrote was probably, it's called The End of the World. And then in parentheses, with you. I actually wrote that at an open mic at Be Here Now because I was a little bit dead, and I had some free time, so I just jotted that down.
I thought you were going to say I just worked it out behind the mic and just played it.
Oh, no, I can't do that. I wrote the words first, like I said.
Nice.
It took maybe like 5 minutes. I mean,
to write the song?
That's usually how it goes. I'll go stretches without doing anything, and then a big stretch will just, they'll just all come out. The first two EPs I came out, I wrote those in like a week each.
Wow.
It was like 5 or 7 songs.
Wow. So what's next for Jerry Barker? Like playing
I'll keep
out?
Writing songs.
Yeah.
Keep playing around. I have no intention to stop.
Yeah. And you should not. So if you want to catch Jerry, you can catch him at most of the open mics, shows with the Onion Cutters.
Yep.
Find your stuff on all the streaming services, Spotify, Apple, all of those. Anywhere else people can go for more information about you and what you've got going on?
Just my socials, Instagram and Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And that's under, is it just, if you just do a search for your name, Jerry Barker?
On Facebook, yeah. And then Instagram is Jerry Barker Music.
Awesome. Jerry, thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Tonight on its way to a foreign shore, thrown overboard by someone who had to settle a score. Gamblers and thieves thrive in the smoke, while others only tell jokes. But I'm just a little too busy trying my best to stay alone. Without a doubt, I have questioned my intentions. Why am I here if I'm never mentioned? Not sure if I should burn my pictures or take more. Remember when you said you felt just like a slamming door? Well, why am I standing here if there's nothing worth fighting for? Hot tin roof in the middle
trivial pursuits flatter those lost and confused. Lead them to a fool's paradise where they think they're free to choose. If you say something too many times, you believe it. Even if you know your heart don't really need it. Not sure if I should burn my pictures or take more. Remember when you said you felt just like a slamming door? Well, why am I standing here if there's nothing worth fighting for? If there's nothing worth fighting for? If there's nothing worth fighting for?
Jerry Barker is a local musician. This is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. The Pop of Culture talk studio is filled with rugs. Tracy Burns has brought them all.
Tracy is an Indiana artisan and has been rug hooking for 25 years. And she has brought, she and her husband have brought so many beautiful pieces into the studio today. I mean, I had looked you up online to see some of your work, but I had not seen it till today. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I really appreciate you being here with us. Can you tell us a little bit about rug hooking? Because I have some things in my mind about it that I don't believe I know what it is.
Okay. A lot of people don't. They think it's a latch hook or a punch needle, but it's much, much older than that. Punch needle and locker hooking and latch hook are all from the late 1920s to 1930s. But rug hooking can trace back all the way to the Vikings.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's the original.
Yes. And it was one of the very first, you know, recycling projects, basically.
Okay. So how do you do it?
Okay. Well, when the Vikings would have done it, they would have taken their their worn-out sails and worn-out clothing, and they would have fashioned a hook out of a knife, a bone, whatever, that would come through the open weave of the sail, and then they would put their old clothing in there, and it would make mats. They would do things for chairs, make them softer. They make them for keeping out drafts on walls because, you know, they didn't have insulation back then, so this was a way to do that. Or they made them for their beds or things to keep them warm. And then as the Vikings traveled through Europe and then where all the sea areas were, and they came down through Nova Scotia, then into the United States.
Okay.
So like Newfoundland and all those places, and then down through the United States from Nova Scotia on, so...
Well, now, how did you discover rug hooking?
At the Indiana State Fair, at the Pioneer Building, we went in 1999. My sister fell in love with it the first time she saw it. And I was just, you know, I just walked by, didn't, you know, pay much attention. She goes, "We need to take these classes." I said, "No, we don't." she talked me into it. So that was in August of 99, and then by October, she had talked me into taking classes with a lady that was like 30 minutes from our home. The first two I wasn't really crazy about, but I talked myself into my third class, and I'm glad I did, because that's where I met the lady that designed her own rugs and then dyed her own wool. So I could see that it could be something more than just what I was seeing there, that I could be more creative and do it myself.
Okay, so in my mind, what you're talking about when you speak about Vikings, their take on it, so we weren't talking a lot of color at that point.
Not really, no.
Okay,
yeah.
Because this work is so vibrant that you do.
Yeah.
So you met this person who opened up your creativity. So then what happened, like, for you?
Okay, so from there, I started taking interest in, okay, how can I make this a little more my style? How do I get away from the primitive look? And then I started seeking out different teachers that had unique styles that they wanted to do. So they were doing more bright flowers, or if you wanted to shade. I have one here that I have, the flowers have six values in each petal. So that gives you a more realistic look of color. And so, like the cougar one here, this is my very first piece that I made as an animal. So I had a very good teacher that specialized in animals and how to dye for them and things like that. So she was from Virginia. So I've actually have taken lessons from 12 different instructors from across the country, and one from Nova Scotia.
Okay.
And so they've all done different techniques that I've incorporated in mine.
So we'll stick with the cougar for now. What, you're not using a Viking sail. So what is the basis or the base piece for your...
Okay. Well, we use... some people still use burlap, but that's the least that we want to use because that one is the least expensive, but it... We found out that it's also the one that will not last as long.
Oh.
Because burlap only lasts 50 years before it dry rots. And so then that's when things start falling apart. So if you go to an antique store and you see a hand-tooked rug, if it's falling apart, it's because it's on burlap. And then what I prefer and what's the best is linen. And all of this is made in Scotland just for rug hooking. I do have some samples here. What we have are these weaves that are made in Scotland just for rug hooking. Now, we order them here in the U.S. Anybody that does rug hooking or has a shop will carry these by the bolt so that you can order it. And the reason why we do it that way is because this is what you get from Walmart, Joann Fabrics, Hancock Fabrics, Hobby Lobby, quilt shops. This is all you get. And you can see that those are not the quality that you want. If you put 24 hours into a square foot of work, you don't want it to fall apart.
You can see the different tension in it. So if you just imagine a piece of burlap, very similar in view, but much tighter. And
yes.
It stays tight.
Yes.
Throughout the process of... the hooking.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the hooking transpire? So you take the base and then mm-hmm. you've brought some tools here. Mm-hmm. And what do you do with the tools to get the actual look that you want?
Okay. So I have a cutter. And so you can cut your wool with a pair of scissors.
Okay.
I did that one time.
One time only.
Yes. It was a very small piece. It was probably, 12 inches in round. And cutting with scissors is hard when you're cutting wool and trying to keep it straight. And then it was never the right size. It was more primitive. And if you want the primitive look, scissors are great. But then all that cutting hurts your hands after a while.
And the width wasn't precise.
Right. And okay. It wasn't precise. Yeah. And so...
Oh, you're going to cut a piece for us.
So by taking it through here, I can get three pieces or four pieces the same width.
Excellent.
And those are 3/16.
Okay. That gives me a much better idea how this happens. That's like a wheel. It looks like it's mm-hmm. got, you said the blades aren't very sharp, but you can just run the fabric through.
Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
So, and then I take the hook and I go under my fabric. So I just hold it between my fingers, pull under, and then ring to the top. And then it's just a matter of loops.
Okay.
And there's no knots.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So Tracy is pulling the fabric piece through the warp and the whip mm-hmm. of the under
mm-hmm.
half.
Of the linen. Mm-hmm.
Of the linen to get the image, to create the image. I'm wondering where we can find your work. And mm-hmm. is your work form and function?
Yes, you can use it actually as a rug.
Excellent.
You can turn them into pillows, chair pads, and then these are basically hung for made for wall hangings. And then I do not put a frame around them. I put them on a stretcher frame because frames can be expensive, and if somebody doesn't like the frame I pick, they may not buy it. So this way they can pick the artwork and then they can put their own style of frame around it. I will be doing the Fiber Art Festival in Portland, Indiana, and that's coming up in March 7th and 8th, and I'll have my work on display there. I'll be teaching a class, and also the Indiana Artisan Marketplace coming up the last weekend of March, and I will be a vendor there. I'll be demonstrating, and my work will be for sale there because everything in the marketplace is for sale.
Excellent. And can you share your website with us?
It's tcburnsrugs.wix.com/house on the hill.
Great. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us today and showing us your beautiful work.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Tracy Burns has been practicing the art of rug hooking right here in East Central Indiana. Driven through downtown Muncie, you've probably seen the Mad Jacks building. But have you been inside? We have an insider to tell us all about it. Carly Acree King is here with us today. She is the new executive director of Mad Jacks. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Kara. I'm excited to talk about things that are going on at Mad Jacks and how my role has been going in the last few months.
Excellent. Well, good. We're interested in finding that out. Could you actually take us to downtown Muncie, where, for those of us who aren't clear on where Mad Jacks is, and tell us a little bit about the building and what goes on there?
Yeah, what's really clever about Mad Jacks and where we're located is that we're at the corner of Madison and Jackson, so hence Mad Jacks. Yes. And so next year we'll be 10 years old, so we're a maker space and a hub in downtown Muncie. And over the past 10 years, we really spent a lot of time revitalizing an 80,000 square foot old CentOS factory into an inspiring hub for creativity and innovation and entrepreneurs. So our mission is to facilitate really this connection of creativity and entrepreneurial development. Entrepreneurial development, yes. To provide the community with the space, the tools, and really the resources to really bring their ideas to life. So at the core, Mad Jacks is about collaboration and community, and we hope to be able to work with people and their big ideas to make them come to life. So inside Mad Jacks, it's a really fun and creative space. I am always impressed and inspired by the dynamic of the inside. And so thinking of a maker space and really how we have brought that to life kind of within the walls of the building. So it's very industrial, very creative, very bright, which having seen that building kind of through its birth, it's very cool to see where it's at. But it's also a very large piece of home to have to maintain. So I think we've done a great job of filling it with some really cool things like our maker spaces. And so they're filled with design and fabrication tools that the public can come and use for to learn, to build, to make. And it's accessible to the public through a membership. We also have our shipyard, which we lovingly call the dirty space. So you'll see it's really the old warehouse part, super tall ceilings, garage door bays on one side, and that is where we have built a wood shop, a metalworking shop, and finalizing a welding station. And what's a great complement to that on our first floor is we have co-working spaces. And so, again, under the idea of entrepreneurship We have a community work environment that folks can come and use for a variety of needs, whether it's a working professional, a small business owner, or even just a student or someone looking to just get out of their house for the day as they work from home, remote worker. We have that too. And so I'm excited to see how those two spaces can really blend and become one. I think that's been one of our challenges is collaboration kind of internally and externally. And so we have really thought about all of our spaces kind of separately without really the chance to think about how they all blend together. And so how do we take the working professional who maybe is in that shirt and tie and get them into a creative space?
Well, in terms of like the shipyard that you're talking about, the shipping yard, the shipping containers, the other areas. So I'm a community member. I'm wanting to make something. Is there someone there to show me how to use these machines?
Yes. So we have a lab manager or a makerspace manager, Wyatt. And so he is also new to Majax. And so he has a lot of experience working in metalworking and in wood shop and is growing to become accustomed to all of our other machines. And so he is a great resource to help you get connected and understand the machines that are in our design lab. If it's not him that can teach you, we have some members already on deck who are ready to come in and help. And then because problem solving and creativity and innovation really is just about, you know, kind of diving in, mm-hmm. A lot of us too are just kind of on the fly figuring out as we go. And so we blend kind of a supportive environment with also just a free kind of information finding.
Well, yeah. Speaking of on the fly as we go, so you're new to Majax, yes. Pretty new, like a few months.
I just, 4 months yesterday.
4 months. Oh,
yes.
Happy anniversary.
It feels like it feels like a long time and a short time all at the same time.
I'm sure.
Very interesting.
Can you walk us through a day a little bit or what you do from day to day?
It's never the same.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
And so that's very cliche, but it's really exciting. Because I'm still learning, a lot of my day is filled with interaction with our tenants, our members who come through the building. And so we provide dedicated space to small businesses and some creative entrepreneurs who call Majax home. And so we're basically releasing space to them to own and operate their business out of. And then also working with Wyatt, who is our one other staff member, to help understand the design lab and kind of what the potential for collaborations or programming within those spaces can be. And so it's all very evolving. And it had been some time that Majax had a dedicated leader in this role. And so it's working with the awesome, strong board that we have to really understand what the direction of the organization is, kind of who are our stakeholders and where do we want to go in the future as our community begins exploring kind of what is the creative spaces for organizations and individuals and how can we all work together better. So it's a blend of, you know, cleaning spaces. So I've rolled up my sleeves and helped kind of clean up some things physically, sweep or mop or change trash. Or it's giving tours to people who are interested in taking space up at Majax. Or it's digging through files and reading and learning and trying to figure out kind of where we've been and helping to navigate where we want to go.
Nice. And speaking of tours, can you just walk in and ask for a tour, or is that something you prearrange?
A little bit, yeah. So because we're it's just two of us right now, and the building's so big, we're never in the same spot. Oh my gosh! The easiest way to get a tour is to contact me. I'd love to show anyone around the space. I love to talk about kind of where things are, and I love to see everyone's responses, like physically, like their eyes light up, or hear them say, "I didn't know this was here." Like I love that sort of discovery for folks. And so my email is Carly@Majax.org. Majax.org is our website, so it's the best way to get in touch with us. Or if you don't want to do a tour, we're hosting a first Thursday in March, so Thursday, March 6th. We're going to do kind of an informal open house style where we're going to have literally our building open, our doors open, spaces unlocked for people to do really self-guided tours or do some guided tours just to help bring people into this space with kind of curiosity and flexibility to really kind of explore on their own. And we're hoping that when the night's over, they'll stick around and grab some food from Guardian, who is one of our anchor tenants who really has helped us be so successful in where we are and really kind of are the embodiment of this collaboration and this creativity and this innovation that really MadJax aspires to be.
It sounds like there's an ongoing conversation between MadJax and the community, but is there like a specific call to action or direction you see right now that MadJax is putting forth?
Yeah, I think we are working hard to be welcoming and inclusive. And so that means saying yes as much as we can to partnerships or folks who are looking for space either to meet or to have performances or to gather. If you've not been to MadJax, I think that would be the first thing I would invite folks to do is to come check us out. And then once you see it, I really believe that really the box will open with ideas that folks will think about ways that they can be involved. And it doesn't have to be, you know, this creativity or innovation. It could be things that we haven't even explored yet. And I think that's a greatness of working and living in the nonprofit sector and being able to dedicate and really serve our community is that we can kind of be this growing evolution of an organization. And I feel really fortunate to be in this position to help MadJax kind of see where it's going to go in the next few years.
Well, that's very exciting, a place to go to collaborate and talk and come together and explore new ideas. Thank you so much for being here today, Carly.
Thank you. This has been very fun.
To have you. Carly Acree King is the executive director at MadJax Maker Force in Muncie. This week, for our segment of Waywo, What Are You Working On?, we are talking with Darren Redman. Darren Redman is a 2D and 3D textile artist who says her art is about sharing life's journey. So thank you so much for taking the time to share a little journey with us today, Darren.
Well, thanks for having me.
You've done a lot of quilting art across Indiana, and today I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your work in East Central Indiana, and I was wondering if you could tell us about a recent show that you had at the Anderson Museum of Art.
Yes, the Anderson Museum of Art asked me to hang some of my art quilts. There was three other textile artists there that same month, so they called it Intertwined. And I had one section, if you've been in the building, it's an old Carnegie Library. So I had the left side half of the room. And so I put up, there was about six large art quilts, and they measure anywhere from 80 to 90 inches wide to 40 to 60 inches high. And I dye fabric. It starts out white. I buy white fabric and I dye it outside in my yard. And then I come up with a little sketch. And then the sketch I enlarge on my overhead projector and make a paper pattern. And from that, I have a pattern, the composition for the quilts.
Can you tell us a little bit? You talked about sketching, making sketches. What inspires your sketching for your abstractions?
A lot of the inspiration I get is from the abstract artists from the 1910s, 1920s, 30s in New York City. So people like Mark Rothko or Stuart Davis. So I'll take a piece of paper. I don't draw a lot. My dad did, but I love to cut up fabric and sew and quilt. So I need a composition. So I start with an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper and then just use a regular pencil, a leaded pencil, not a colored pencil, and start drawing shapes and lines. And then inside the shape, maybe I'll divide that shape into maybe triangles or rectangles or squares or petal shapes. Then I do come back with colored pencils and color the composition just on this little 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. Then, like I said, I take a photo of that and then plug my iPhone into my overhead projector. Now I can project that on the wall to, you know, 80 to 90 inches wide in my studio. Then I get out big rolls of paper and pin the paper to the design wall. Then I just start drawing in the shapes that I had, you know, started with the little sketch.
Well, that's very handy that you can just project from your phone.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you something else. You said that you hung some art quilts, and you said the term art quilts. Can you share with us what that means?
Well, it's kind of controversial. Some artists just want to call their quilts art. I still use the term art quilts because a lot of times in Indiana and in this part of the region, people think that the quilts are just for the bed. And so when I refer to art quilts, my quilts hang on the wall. And then it is quilted. I don't hand quilt. I quilt on the sewing machine or a quilting machine. And then with the ribbons, that's my version of applique. And again, they're machine stitched down, one on each side, the left side and the right side.
Okay. Well, for you then, your art quilts, is the intent ever for them to be utilized?
No, they're always hanging on the wall.
Mm-hmm. And can you share with us what applique is?
Applique is where you take a piece of paper or a piece of fabric and you attach it to another piece of paper or piece of fabric with either glue or stitching by hand or stitching on the sewing machine. So the top, it's usually a motif like a leaf or a heart or a line. My lines are out of grosgrain ribbon. I buy grosgrain ribbon different widths, 3 and 4 inch, 1 inch and a half inch widths. So when I applique or attach them to the bottom layer of fabric, I use the sewing machine, but you can hand stitch.
Yes, I've seen some hand stitched work and I've seen some with the machine. But one thing I don't know, another thing I don't know, I should say, is what is grosgrain ribbon?
Okay, grosgrain, it's a ribbon that's almost like a corduroy. And it's the higher end grosgrain ribbon is called Petersham. It's out of England. I don't know the history. It's been around for a long time. But it has ridges that go the width of the ribbon. And it's almost like a corduroy. It's not flat and it's not satiny. And then it moves. You can form it into arcs or curves by holding one in and putting the iron and making the curve with your hands. And then you press the curve with the iron and it kind of sets it in until I can get it over to the top of the quilt and pin it down. But then I pin about every inch so it doesn't move while I'm sewing it on the left side with the sewing machine. And then then I turn it around and sew it on the right side of the ribbon edge.
Oh, well, I appreciate you explaining that because that really helps me. And right before we started talking on the air, you mentioned that you're doing some work with ACT in Columbus. And can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing with them?
Yes, the owners found me. They have a couple of quilts that I made. They're turning a big building into offices for their employees. And so part of the problem they had is they put glass walls in and wood floors. So when you walk into the office, there's an echo. Mm-hmm. So by putting a rug on the floor, that helps. But then I also made 6 quilts, one for six offices. Then there's a couple of couches in the lobby. So I'm making 1 8-foot quilt for one couch, and then I'm making 5 7-foot panels for the other couch, goes over the couch. And then there's another section of windows. This is 22 feet long. So I'm putting another quilt up there. So it'll be 26 inches high by 22 feet long.
That's amazing. It sounds like it's going to be beautiful and it's going to help them with their sound issues. I really appreciate you spending some time with us today, Darren. Where can we see your work?
I have a website, darrenredmond.com.
Great.
And then the Columbus, Indiana there's Ivy Tech, IUPUI. There's a building called Columbus Learning Center, and it's out by the airport. There's one of my larger works down by one of the conference rooms. Then there's another one hanging in the stairway. And then there's another work that I made of a big waterfall inside a mountain in Switzerland. It's at Indiana University School of Medicine. It's in the dean's office.
Well, thank you for telling us where we can find you. And thank you for speaking with us.
Thanks, Kara.
It's time for the arts calendar, Kara. And I think we'll start with a little love.
Everybody needs some love.
That's right. Masterworks Chorale will have its Valentine's concert this weekend. Love in Full Swing will begin at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, February 15th, in the ballroom of Ball State University's Student Center. The chorale will be joined by a combo jazz band from Ball State and the Delta High School Choir. The concert will feature jazz standards and much more. MuncieMasterworks.org has the details.
The 90th Annual Student Art Show is now open at the Greiner Gallery at Ball State. The exhibit, open through March 15th, is a competitive juried show honoring the School of Arts student artists. Works include animation, ceramics, drawing, game art design, glass, and more.
That's a lot. That is a lot of art. Excited about that. The Ball State Wind Ensemble and Wind Symphony will perform at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, February 15th at Cirsa Performance Hall.
There are, of course, a lot of Valentine's Day options this weekend. But what about something just for the gals? Galentine's parties are happening at Belgian Horse Winery, Tunney Winery, and Room 5 Piano Bar, just to name a few.
Great. Minnetrista Museum and Gardens is hosting a Tapas and Talk, Look Closely, an Indigenous Artist Panel on Wednesday, February 19th. Join Katrina Mitten, Carolyn Pallett, Monica Raphael, and Maria Walker for an engaging evening as they explore their legacy of preserving and passing down intricate artistic traditions through generations. Minnetrista.net is the place to go for more info.
The CODO One Earth Tour 2025 Warabi is coming to Emmons Auditorium in Muncie on Wednesday, February 19th, exploring the limitless possibilities of the traditional Japanese drum called the taiko. The show is forging new directions for a vibrant living art form. More information at bsu.edu/Emmons/Emmons.
The Indiana Repertory Theater in Indianapolis is presenting Nina Simone, For Women, through March 2nd. Billed as a revolution in song, this play with music imagines a conversation among Simone and three other Black women, showing how the iconic singer and activist forged her true calling and gave voice to a movement.
I would love to see that.
Yes, that's going to be good.
Jersey Boys opens this weekend at Beef and Board's Dinner Theater in Indy. Shows continue through April 13th. Discover the fascinating secret of a 40-year friendship that led Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons to work their way from the streets of New Jersey to the heights of stardom. This Tony Award winner for Best Musical includes Sherry, Big Girls Don't Cry, Can't Take My Eyes Off of You, and more.
Sherry, baby. Ball State University singers will perform as part of the Chautauqua Wawasee in Syracuse, Indiana this weekend. The concert is set for Sunday, February 16th. For more about the Chautauqua, go to ChautauquaWawasee.org.
If you have an event Pop of Culture listeners would love, let us know at IndianaPublicRadio.org/contact. Then select Pop of Culture.
Woo!
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at IndianaPublicRadio.org.
And that's our show. This episode was produced by Luke Jones, who loves his co-hosts, with production assistance from Jack Ringenberg. Our show was hosted by me, Kara Duquette.
And me, Michelle Kinsey. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University.